You're listening to Flip Empire, the show committed to helping real estate entrepreneurs who want to build their empire without sacrificing their life. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Have I got an incredible show for you today. I'm interviewing my good friend, Michelle Murray, who has built one of the strongest and best wholesaling operations in South Florida. She now runs a seven-figure business, and I've known Michelle for well over a decade, and I can tell you firsthand, because I've had the opportunity to do quite a few joint venture deals with her throughout the year, that she went from making $3,000 to $5,000 a deal, doing a handful of deals a month, to well over seven figures a year now. She's got a team of close to 20 people, and she's built the business on systems, processes, structure, hiring the right people, culture. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about in today's show. She's going to share not just what works, but what are some of the biggest failures, i.e. lessons learned? What are some of the challenges when it came to hiring, when it came to creating processes and systems and structure? This isn't sexy, but it's the backbone of any business. So I believe you're going to get a lot out of this podcast episode. This is episode 701. So thank you for supporting the show. Without further ado, let's hop into it with my good friend, Michelle Murray. What's going on, my friends? Alex Pardo here. Super blessed and fortunate to have my good friend, Michelle Murray, back on the podcast. And I say back on, we were just talking offline, and this absolutely blows my mind. I had Michelle on the podcast for episode 22 back in 2016, and she was talking all about co-wholesaling. And you're about to learn so much more because her business has grown and evolved. And I'm so proud of her for all the success that she's achieved. And more importantly, the direction that she's taken her business in now and really wanting to help and impact others. But before we get going, I want to encourage you guys, subscribe to the podcast. We just crossed over the 7-year anniversary. This is episode 701. And that would not be possible without you guys listening and tuning in. So thank you. Our job here is to reward you with the best possible content. And it's always my goal and aim to just bring you people that I know operate with integrity and that are doers, that actually are out there doing the business and can walk the walk. So with that being said, Michelle and I have known each other. I recall having lunch with Michelle back in the Miami Springs area. I want to say this must have been 2013, 14, around there.
Yeah, probably.
And Michelle, I'm going to introduce you in a quick second here. So correct me if I'm wrong, but at the time, I want to say you were a one-woman show. Maybe you had an assistant at the time. And it's incredible to learn that now your business is roughly about 20 team members. And really, your expertise comes with systems, processes, operational team structure. Like when I think of those things, there's a few people I think of and you're one of them. So with that being said, my friend, it's incredible to have you back on the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back. Last time we spoke, I was a one-woman show and I was very heavily into co-wholesaling. I didn't really have a team built and I relied heavily on other people finding deals. I think that's what we were doing. You were finding deals and I was JVing with you on your deal. So that worked for several years because it was sprung in income. It showed me the market. I learned the whole market and how things were going. I got to know people like yourself. And at some point, I noticed that I wanted to get on the other side of the table. I was like, wait a minute, I'm making $3,000 and this guy's making 30. Like, I want to be on that side of the table. So at some point, I'm like, I'm going to go ahead and start marketing and try to find deals of my own after I did the co-wholesaling for about, I want to say, 3 to 5 years. I did it for a really long time.
Michelle, you don't know this, but I remember internally in our team, whenever we couldn't find a buyer, I would always look to like my right hand or like my dispo manager. I say, call Michelle. Michelle's always got buyers. Like that was one thing that I really want to kind of underscore for people listening is that you don't have to be great at every aspect of the business if you don't desire to grow and scale the way that Michelle has chosen to do. But if you want to just specialize in one particular area of the business, you can make a very good living. You can make quite a bit of money when it comes to volume. And I remember over a decade ago, Michelle was just a ninja when it came to finding buyers. Now, to her point, she was getting the smaller end of the profit margin, right? But for you, Michelle, I remember it was a volume game. On average, how many buyers were you bringing to people's deals on a monthly basis?
I had gotten so good at it that I had to be doing like around 5 to 6 a month.
Yeah.
Which, mind you, I wasn't spending any money on marketing. I didn't have a team. I didn't have a bunch of overhead. So that was actually a great living. But what happened is going and scaling to that level as a co-wholesaler, it started to hit a ceiling, right? After like 5-6 years, I'm like, okay, I'm still bumping in. I'm still making $250,000, $300,000 a year. And I can't really get past that. Yeah. I made contact with all the wholesalers in the market. Like, I think I'd known everybody at that point. There was no one else for me to make contact that I didn't. So I'm grateful for that experience because I needed it. It helped me get where I was. But ultimately, at one point, I made a decision. And I was like, well, if I want to make $1 million business, I'm not going to be able to do it through co-wholesaling.
Right.
I came to that realization. And one day, I just kind of just like, stopped. I just stopped co-wholesaling altogether. And I built a marketing machine to go direct to seller, right? Yeah. I started with doing postcards. By this time, I already had all the buyers. So I knew what they wanted. I knew exactly what type of properties I needed to target. So I just started mailing. I think my first real budget was like $3,000 a month. I said, okay, I can afford that. And I just mailed. And then I started to getting calls. And then I slowly but surely built a team around that, first by hiring one acquisition guy, and then built on that. And then it's kind of snowballed into what I've got going on today. Yeah. But it hasn't been easy. There's been lots of bumps along the way. I wish it was a straight linear path that I followed, but it was a lot of zigzags. I ran into a lot of challenges with leads, how to organize leads, how to hire properly, how to keep people after I've hired them, how to keep them.
wait a second, Michelle. You mean you don't just hire people and they just stay with you forever? It doesn't work that way?
Oh, no. Absolutely not. People is a job to them. People come in, they do well, hopefully. And then after a certain amount of time, they want to move on for whatever reason. And it's not anything that you can necessarily control. And for me, I used to get like really upset when that happened, because I'm like, oh gosh, I spent all this time with this guy, 6 months just to get him up to speed. And now everything's perfect. And now we're a year in and, you know, now he's telling me, you know, he wants to go off on his own and do his own thing, or he wants to do this or that. And I was like, gosh, what a huge waste of time. Now I have to start all over again and try to find someone. So that was a struggle that I had for many, many years. But it opened up my eyes to like, oh, no, this is just the way things work for the most part. I mean, yes, you can do things to make certain that you provide a great win-win for anybody that works for you, hopefully to the point where they won't want to leave. But at the end of the day, you have to build your system in such a way that someone wanting to move on, or you high five them and send them on their way, and you can put someone else into their seat and your business doesn't take a huge hit as a result.
By the way, I'm grateful that you just previewed all that, because we're going to get into like nuts and bolts of how Michelle, like processes, systems, team structure, like how she built this. Because when her and I first started building a relationship and a friendship, her business was completely different than it is today. So I want to take a few steps back, Michelle, before we transition into that aspect of your business. Co-wholesaling. I know I can only speak for myself. Sometimes I take for granted some of the things that we know, but for somebody listening who doesn't really, hasn't heard that term, quickly explain what co-wholesaling is.
Yeah. So it's basically two wholesalers coming together. One person has a deal and then the other person has a list of buyers. So ultimately, you know, we all have a list of buyers, but my list may be different from yours. My list may be bigger than yours, or vice versa. So they're different people on the list. So if you were to bring a deal to me and I were to market that deal simultaneously with you, chances are if I have a bigger list, then I might find a buyer faster than you. And at the end of the day, we want to sell our deals fast. So that's what I was doing. I was selling other people's deals to my buyers because I had a really big, very sticky buyers list.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. When we attempted to do that, in other words, when we tried to do what Michelle was an expert at, we failed miserably. Yes, sometimes we connected buyers to other people's deals, but we always had a challenge because we didn't have control of the deal, right? Like sometimes we'd be too late to the party, meaning we had a buyer, somebody ready to go, but they had already sold it. Or we had a buyer, but they were making more elsewhere. Or we had a buyer and they ended up going around us. Like we had all these challenges that we just said internally, like, screw it. Let's just start direct to seller marketing so we can control the deal. Mm-hmm. How did you get around some of those challenges, assuming they were even challenges for you? Maybe they weren't. I don't know.
Well, They were, but I think what I did is that I had a big buyers list. Let's put it that way. So I was able to get the buyers fast, quickly. I was late to the party. I'm sure people went around me. I'm sure all those things happened to me. I think just because I was doing so much that I was able to live with the fall through. Because I remember when you were like, Michelle, I want to do this thing. Tell me about it. And I was telling you what to do. You were testing with, okay, let me do it with this deal and this deal. But remember, I was sending out like 15 people's deals at the same time. So the volume compensated for the fall through.
That makes sense. And that's where I went wrong. Cause I remember I used to grab a cup of coffee just to like scroll through your email because you had so many deals on there. Right. And so that makes a ton of sense. But obviously you realize, I think you said it a little while ago, is that you couldn't scale that kind of business.
Yeah.
You had already done all the networking in the South Florida market. Everybody knew Michelle Murray. There was only but so many buyers that you could continue to add to your list. And you were making $3,000 to $5,000 a deal. And to achieve $1 million a year business, that's a lot of deals.
Right? Yeah.
So you talked about transitioning and saying, hey, I'm just going to stop doing this and I'm going to start doing postcards. Was it like a light switch for you where you had enough of a savings or you had a cushion where you felt comfortable trying to figure out the marketing game? Or was it a slow transition into that?
Yeah, it was somewhat of a slow transition, but I did have an immediate epiphany knowing that I couldn't scale. And when I had that epiphany, I started to slowly, because I still wanted to bring in income. I still had a machine that was running. So I had to continue to roll it and roll it as I started to test the marketing. And then when I saw the marketing start to bear fruit, then I slowly started to cut it off. And then at some point, I cut it off completely. So yeah, I did transition into it slowly. It wasn't like pulling the Band-Aid off, so to speak. Right. But I did it probably quick within a 90-day period. Basically. Okay. And it was not easy because probably for 6 months after that, I kept getting calls and it was very difficult to turn away people like, Michelle, I got this deal. I know you can sell. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that anymore. And they're like, what? Wow. It was like, it felt counterproductive. It's like, oh my God, I'm just turning away money. But I had to like, wait, stay focused. You're changing over to this new thing and it will work. Don't worry. So I think in business, period, whenever you know you need to change something, if what you're doing even bears a little bit of fruit, it's hard to stop it completely.
Sure, I get it.
But I was able to do it, thankfully. And to be honest, it was one of the best things that I've ever done in my business. Looking back, even though I struggled in the beginning to try to actually get it up and running and profitable, I figured out the things. I got over the obstacles and it's not completely smooth sailing now. I still run into issues, but they're different issues. You know what I mean?
I want to kind of pause, Michelle, and dig into the mindset and just how you're wired, your DNA, because I think anyone listening can relate to having to make a difficult decision and then choosing being uncomfortable for growth or just choosing comfort because of fear or uncertainty or doubt or whatever. You obviously chose the former. You said, hey, I need to take a few steps back in order to slingshot forward and build the kind of business I want. Talk to me about your mindset. Like, what drove and gave you the confidence to do that? Like you just said, you were literally turning money down. You were turning money away because you had a vision and you wanted to go in a certain direction. What do you attribute having that confidence? Was it faith? Was it mentorship? Was it like, what was it that said, hey, I can do this. I can turn this money away because I know what I'm building over here.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I'm a reader. I read a lot of books. One of the books that helped me was the book by Michael Gerber, The E-Myth, the classic. I read that book and it really showed me that, look, you need to build something that's scalable, infinite. And I knew that what I was doing was not scalable, infinite. It just wasn't. There was no question about it. There was no doubt about it. So I wanted to transition into something like that. So number one, reading helped me kind of solidify the thoughts that I was already having. But aside from that, I'll be honest, I had a little bit of a cushion there where I was able to take the risk, where I was able to turn down money. I would have never done that in the early stages of my wholesaling career. Like, I feel like everybody's career, whether wholesaling or any business, you go through stages. You got like your startup stages where you're just trying to get something off the ground. And then you got your like hustle, like, you don't turn down nothing stage where everything, like, give it to me. I got everything. And then you transition to a stage where, okay, let's put a method to this madness, right? To where you have a little bit of cushion, you're not hurting, you're eating, but you see a vision and you're able to strategically start to build that vision for the greater future. Yeah. So I was in a stage where I was transitioning into that out of the hustle mentality and into the, okay, I want to build a business that I know can scale. And then I could start to do less, because at the end of the day, I wanted to do less. I'd already talked to all the buyers. I already gone to talk to sellers. Like, I didn't want to do those no more. Those were the grunt work. I wanted to remove myself from the grunt work. And that was the only way.
Well, I'd love to give credit to whoever I learned this from, but it always stuck with me years ago. I may have read it in a book or heard somebody say it, but when the why is big enough, the how will reveal itself. And the reason I share that, Michelle, is because I think too many people that you and I know, even locally in our market, that their business looks the exact same as it did 7-8 years ago, which is fine because that's a choice. But I find that too many people don't build the kind of business they truly want because they don't always have the how. They don't take that leap. Maybe their why isn't big enough. And so if you're listening and you're like, hey, I know what kind of business I want, and I want a business to provide for my family and to have a certain lifestyle, or I want a purpose-driven business, whatever that case might be, don't always get stuck on trying to have the how figured out, right? Like when you take the first step, the next step revealed. It's kind of that analogy of like, if you and I were here in South Florida, we hopped in a car, we said, hey, let's go to San Diego without a GPS or a map. Like, it would be tough, but when you get guidance, mentorship, books, right? Like the E-Myth, like when you figure out that all the resources are around you, you just got to take that leap. The next 300 feet that your spotlight or headlights are going to show you is all you need. All you need is the next couple of steps ahead of you. So I share that to hopefully encourage people to stop always trying to wait for the stars to align in order to like take a leap and get uncomfortable. And kudos to you, my friend, because I remember I hosted a local mastermind. I think it was in Broward or West Palm. Everybody paid, I think, $1,000 to be there. We had about 20 people in the room, and that money was donated to the people that suffered from the hurricane. I want to say this was 2017, 18. And I remember, Michelle, at that point you spoke and you had just leased an office. This is when you were first getting your office up and running. And I saw the hunger in your eyes. Like, you knew exactly what you wanted, and you were stepping out into the unknown. Talk to us about that transition, because I want to say, was that around the time that you said, hey, I'm going to go out and get an office and I'm going to start hiring people?
Yeah, I think that was right around the time when I did that. So I was green, hopeful, stars in my eyes, like, okay, this is going to work. Like, I have everything I need. I got resources. I know people. This is going to be a piece of cake, right? So when I opened the office, put out my ads in the paper, and people started to come in, and I started to interview, you know, at the first I wanted to hire like a personal assistant, like a catch-all executive assistant. I think I hired like the third person that I interviewed, and it didn't work out. A year later, you know, I was firing this person and started to like get discouraged and like, oh no, this is going to be more difficult than I anticipated. But in hindsight, some of the mistakes I made were actually mistakes I needed to make. Like, I needed to hire the wrong people in order for me to understand what the right person looked like. Like, I needed to go through that pain. I needed to do that. So like, when people maybe listen to this and say like, how can I avoid some of these mistakes? Well, I actually think they should make these mistakes. If you want to hire your first person, go out and just use your best decipherness or whatever, and then hire them and then see how it works out. Do your best, see how it works out. If it goes wrong, you can start all over. Like, it's okay. But you will learn in the process of what the right person for you or what the right person for each role is. Today, I mean, I was looking in my CRM and I was like adding a new person to my CRM. And I was like, I saw on the side, you have added 100 users since 10 years ago. And I'm like, damn, I've added 100 users. Like, I have 20 people. So like, I fired 100 people. Like, it was mind blowing to me, but that much better at hiring today than I was then.
Yeah.
Like, I could talk to someone on the phone and I can instantly decipher like if they're good enough for a particular role. And then I know what personalities go with different roles.
Yeah.
I think what's being revealed to me now that I want to say I've always known about you, but now it's like really coming out in this conversation and just seeing some of the stuff that you've put out on social media over the last couple of months is that you lean into the challenges and what people would call the failures, and they shy away from that feeling. Like, you tend to lean into that. And what I think I'm hearing and seeing from you, Michelle, is that you have a mindset that like, hey, if I fail, I'm going to figure something out. And I think sometimes in life and business, what you don't want and knowing that is just as important and in some cases more important than knowing what you actually do want. Because by knowing what you don't want, like i.e. your experience with hiring the wrong person, that'll reveal to you, hey, okay, I know what I don't want. And then you can figure out what you do want and you figure out what the right person looks like. So again, I just want to like publicly acknowledge you because you seem to be the type of person that doesn't shy away or back down from challenges. And you don't let not knowing how to do something stop you from ultimately achieving what it is that you want. Like you have that mindset that I'm going to figure it out one way or the other, even if I fail, and I'm willing to fail in order to get to that.
Yeah. I think it ultimately comes down to realizing in the beginning what the worst case scenario is. Like, okay, if I hire this person and I train them and it doesn't work out 6 months later, like what's the worst that can happen?
That's a good point.
It's not like we're flying fighter jets where if I don't have this figured out, I'm going to kill everybody. Like, no, it's not life or death. Like you're going to do this. You're going to spend this money on this marketing. You're going to hire that mentor. Like is the best case scenario and the worst case scenario? Like, can you live with the worst case scenario? Yeah. Will you survive? Will that worst case scenario teach you something? Yeah, and if the answer is yes, then you should probably do it.
And ask yourself, what does it cost me if I don't decide to do this? Mm-hmm. Too many people are focused on like, I hear all the time, Michelle, I'm sure you've heard, right? Like, I can't afford a $50,000 or $60,000 a year salary. And I always tell them, you're not paying 50 or 60 grand a year. You're hiring them for 3 to 6 months. That doesn't cost you 50 to 60 grand.
Yeah.
But then reverse it. Like, what does it cost you if you choose to remain where you're at? If in fact you want to grow, or if in fact you want XYZ, insert the blank, whatever it is. So just reversing the equation and asking yourself, like, what's the opportunity cost if I don't do this? Or how can I afford to not make this particular hire or decision, right?
Totally. Because it's just to piggyback on that and reiterate, like, it's a matter of, okay, because you're going to be working your ass off either way.
Yeah.
So to me, it was like, I'm going to work my ass off and wholesale everybody's deals and continue to make $300,000 a year, or I'm going to work my ass off and try to build this business and have the potential of building $1 million a year. I'm going to be working either way. That's right. 100%. You know what I mean? I'm going to be working either way. So I'd rather work where the payoff is bigger.
Yeah. I'm going to fast forward to something I wanted to ask you, but you kind of brought this up. And so I'm curious. I've had several conversations with people in my inner circle, and there's been the majority of people that say it's not possible. And I've entered into a season, Michelle, in the last couple of years where I really question everything I believe. And I ask myself, why do I believe that, right? Is it something that was instilled in me from childhood? Mm-hmm. Is it something it's a belief I grabbed onto and now I believe it to be true? But most people I talk to, even in large masterminds I've been a part of, say that you cannot sell a wholesaling business, that a wholesaling business is not saleable, that you can't fully automate it and step away for 6 months to a year and come back and have the same kind of business. I tend to agree with that. And yet I'm open to the possibility that I'm wrong because I haven't seen it done. I'm questioning if it's possible. I see people like you. I see others. They're so bright. They're so determined. They've built this machine and it's an incredible machine that cranks out, in your case, 7 figures a year. Is that kind of business saleable? Do you think it's something that you can ultimately one day turn around and sell to somebody?
That's a really good question. I say yes and no. And here's why. I think that somebody someday will sell a wholesale business if they are able to systemize it to the point where there's very little risk for the buyer. Although that's yet to be done, I think it's possible if someone goes like that far. But then at the same time, knowing what I know today, I feel that you can systemize wholesaling to a point. So I think that you can systemize 80% of the business or probably even 90%, but there's always need to have to be someone at the helm of that to pass down decisions that has enough experience in that same business to see around the corners, to know, you know, how to interpret the data that the business is throwing off. So I think that CEO that runs that business needs to be there. Like, I can't imagine a CEO from another industry coming in and switching out unless they have like years of training, being able to run that business perfectly where it's able to be sold. I think it's difficult to do, but I think someone will.
Yeah. And maybe somebody has done it and you and I are just not aware. Yeah. That's also possible. I don't know. I haven't personally heard of it happening. I think the only edit I'll make to your comment, and I think I agree with most of what you said, is I have seen some teams that have just a rock star COO, right? Chief Operating Officer or integrator that runs the ship and the CEO has been able to step away. However, the challenge I've also seen is if that something happens to that COO, now they're back right like at the helm, right? Like they're back into that role. Yeah. I remember I built a business at one point where I had a really key, awesome acquisition person. And then when he left, now I ended up in that role again. And the last thing I wanted to do was go sit in a seller's living room and close deals. Like I had been there, done that. I didn't want to do it anymore. And so for me, that was always the challenge I had is I didn't want to build a massive team, but I wanted to build a team that could function without me. Where like you and I were talking offline, where fortunately you were able to take 3 weeks off and just building a business where we can step away and come back to a business that's thriving without us is what I always wanted. And personally, I struggled within the wholesaling business. I had a lot of success. We had great team members. But to your point, you mentioned this earlier, finding the right people, investing into them, and then creating a culture, creating a structure that allows them to thrive. Because the worst thing you can experience in business is turnover, especially I think if you're the CEO. So I want you to talk a little bit about that, about just the importance of building the systems, the processes, the structure, but then you need people to run those systems. You've been able to successfully do that with several virtual assistants. So just talk about the importance of finding the right people.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's key. You have to find the right people. And there's this saying, put the right butts in the right seats. So I struggled in the beginning because I didn't know the personality type for each role. Now I know that if I'm hiring for someone for acquisition, I need someone that is not afraid of rejection, that can make a lot of calls, talk to a lot of people, someone that's more of a people person. Yeah. And I know that if I'm hiring for dispo, I want them to be a little bit assertive, kind of like straight shooter, not necessarily rude, but they're kind of like assertive people. So I have those pegged as far as my personality types. At one point I didn't. I just put assertive people in the acquisition spot and then opposite. So I struggle with that. And then another thing is, you mentioned it, culture. After hiring and firing 100 people, every time I interview someone, I use it as a learning experience and I ask them, where are you coming from? What did you used to do before this, right? And a lot of people interviewed with me that work for other wholesaling companies, some of them of which I know, right? And, yeah. You know, I asked them, you know, why did you leave? What happened? Why are you unhappy? Why are we here? Why are we talking? And their answers were eye-opening to me. I heard a lot of things such as, oh, you know, they said they were going to pay me one thing. And then, you know, I got in, and then they tried to switch it up. Or I started doing too well and they started to pull back and they wanted to change my split and my structure. Or they oversold the position. They told me I was going to come in and I was going to make this amount and the actual potential is probably half that. Or there was no transparency. Like I felt like I was working in a vacuum. I didn't know what happened before me or after me. So that helped me shape and my business. So I used like all of the things. Now that I think about it, it was unconsciously, but consciously, that's what I did.
Yeah, that's great.
I used everything that they're saying that they didn't like on the reasons why they left. And I structured my team the right way. Like today, there's total transparency. Like my team knows how much I spend on marketing. My team knows what it takes to bring a deal in the door. They know what it takes to get a deal to closing. Like they understand the other parts of the business, at least on a high level end, not necessarily in the details, but they understand each part of the business and they're able to work their part better. They're able to help bring deals in and help get them out by making suggestions to the other departments. And then when they do a deal, they're able to follow their deal. They're not like after out of sight, out of mind, like my acquisition people, they can follow their deal straight to closing. I had people say, well, once I brought them a deal and then I kind of like got shut off and then I didn't know what would happen. And then I was like, wait a minute, where's my checks? And oh, we didn't close any deals. And they're like, really? You know what I'm saying? So it's just, they were working in a vacuum and then they turned into resent their boss, not trust what the boss would say because they didn't have a window into what was happening. So that was something that I did totally different. And everyone that I had come through the business praised me for that. It's like, I love the way that your system is structured. Like I can see what's happening with everything and I can fully trust you. And when you have challenges, you share it with the team. And when we have successes, you share it with the team.
Yeah.
And then one last thing is tying your team members to your success. So what I mean is all of my team members have a base pay, but almost every position is tied to revenue. So when we make more, everybody in the company gets a spiff, of that, or at least whatever they were involved in.
Right.
So it helps us all row in the same direction. Like they want to get to, like if Michelle sets a goal, like she wants to make $300,000 a month or whatever it is, like they're trying to push, they're trying to figure things out to help us get there, because that means that they're going to make money too.
Gosh, I want to kind of just jump into the conversation here because there's so much wisdom. If people just rewind the last 3-4 minutes, first of all, I don't think I've interviewed a lot of people, Michelle, throughout the years. I don't think I've ever heard anybody highlight how they learned from interviewing people what not to do and how other operators operate, right? And I think, first of all, I can attest firsthand to your integrity, to your honesty, to your transparency, because people listening to this are about to learn. But you and I was pretty well connected in the software market. I feel like I still am. And I could have gone to any number of people when I decided to transition my wholesaling operation and just take some time off, figure out what's next. And then ultimately, I ended up on the storage business. You and I had an arrangement where you started to work a lot of my leads. And you've probably sent me 2 or 3 checks over the last couple of years. I'm not involved in the process. You didn't have to do that, even though we had an agreement. Like there's a lot of people that would have just said, hey, there's no way he can find out. And you didn't. Every now and then I get a random text and you're like, hey, we just closed the deal from one of your old leads. Like, what's your address? And while I'm not surprised, I want to mention it here because those are the types of people that I want to align myself with. Those are the types of people I want to work with. Now I'm thinking about how do I try to send Michelle more business? Because I know she operates with integrity. I know she's competent. She's got a team. So like those are the people, guys, that you need to aim to work with. So the fact that you're sharing, hey, I'm fully transparent with my team. They can track the deal on their dashboard or however you guys manage it. That's not surprising. And it's also the reason or a big part of the reason why you're so successful. And many people have stopped wholesaling and why you've grown it. Not just continued it, you've grown it. You and I know so many people in our market that are still one man or one woman shows. And again, that's their choice. So that's fine. But you had a vision for what you wanted. You went out there and did it. And you did it with integrity. You did it with character. You built the right culture. So I think you're a shining example or an inspiration, I should say, for people of how to do it the right way.
Yeah.
And there's many ways to do it the right way, right? But like you chose a specific path. So I want to give you your flowers for that because I think it's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, I wouldn't have done it any other way because it's just, like you said, a part of my character. And once I heard the way other people were doing it, I'm like, I wouldn't do it that way. And now I know the way that I'm doing it is the right way to go. So yeah, that's how I'm operating the business here today. And for the most part, when people come and I hire people into the system, they love it and they want to stay. They want to stay as long as possible, right? Because if I'm tying them to the success, I'm sharing my plans. Okay, all right. So we're going to double the marketing. This is going to what we're expecting as a result. They get excited along with me. They're like, yeah, let's do it. Like, come on, bring it on.
You've structured in a way where when one person wins, everyone wins. And again, yes, they're all rowing in the same direction. That's so key. The last kind of part of the show here is I'd be an idiot if I didn't ask you some tactical questions about processes, systems, and structure, because again, you're expert with that. And the rumor on the street is that you have created this course, this library of videos and how-to and standard operating procedures. So I probably got a handful of questions for you. And we'll keep this tight because I want to give people just like a spoonful of nuggets on how they can start to either tweak existing processes, structure, systems that they have, or start building it if they're just kind of running and gunning. What comes first in your mind? The rock stars, the team members, or the systems? In other words, should people build the system first, then go find the people, or should you try to find talented rock stars and then use those people to help build the system?
It's a good question. I'm actually say, in my opinion, neither. I think the best way to set up a system is to do it yourself first.
Okay.
So like every role in the company I did, even if it's for a short period of time, even if it's for literally 2 weeks or a week, I did the process and tried to understand what the best way of doing it is. And then I turned it into a system. Because you don't want to systemize chaos, or you don't want to systemize something that's not even working, right? So I think you would run the risk if you were to hire first to hiring either the wrong person that doesn't know how to do it well, or if you did it the other way around, then you systemizing the wrong thing.
Right,
so I think do it first, get a working thing. Let's say it's text messaging. Get it working. Is it bringing in leads? Yes, it's bringing leads. Then systemize it. And the best way to do that is just to record yourself while you're doing it.
Yeah. And I don't know if you do it any differently, Michelle. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this. We did the same thing years ago. And what we did was in Podio, we had our systems and our SOPs, but we had like 30, 40, 50, 60 minute videos. And then I hired an EOS implementer to come in and just put the EOS operating system into our business. And he looked at our SOPs and he says, "This is really, really good. You have more than most people out there have. There's only one problem." I said, "What?" He said, "What happens if one little thing in your process changes?" I said, "Now you got to go probably recreate this entire video." Or what happens if a team member has a question on a specific part of the process? Are you going to have them sit through 47 minutes of this video? So I said, "Well, we have this SOP." And they said, "That's great. But here's what I would recommend. Take this 40-minute video and think of a table of contents and chunk it down into 3 to 5 minute bite-sized videos. That way, if one part of the process changes, all you got to do is re-record that 3 to 5 minute videos." I was like, "Damn, that's really smart. That makes a lot of sense." And so I want to share that for people listening. Not that there's a right or wrong, but it was kind of painful. But then we took those big videos and we chunked them down. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that and how you decided to do it.
Well, I'm doing my setup similar. Like, I'll record a 40-minute video, but then I had that foresight. Like, what if they only want to know, you know, one part and it's a 47-minute video? So what I did is I take every video that I make. So I don't necessarily split the video apart, but I transcribe it and then I timestamp it. Minute 1:04 is where I'm talking about how to upload the thing, right? So if they want to know how to upload the thing, instead of, they could just go to the minute 1:04 because it's transcribed. So that's what I've done to help with that issue. But to the second issue about things changing, right now, when things change, I just have to re-record the video, unfortunately. Yeah. So I like that idea, changing the video.
Yeah. Do you set aside time, like whether it's monthly or quarterly, to go back and kind of stress test the system and look at the process and either go through it yourself or have somebody in your team go through it to see if it's either A, broken, or B, can it be improved?
Well, we improve it as we go. So when we run into a problem is then we stress test it, right? So if we run into a problem, then we'll go back and we'll change the system. As far as the system itself, I only look at it anew if I need to change over our personnel. If I hired someone for lead intake and they're fine, they've been with me 2 years and they know it like the back of the hand, I won't look at that system again until if that person needs to be replaced. Yeah, then I'll go back and I'll say, "Okay, is this system still relevant?" And then I'll probably have to switch it out and change a few things.
Got it. Do you ever ask your team members, Michelle, to like, do you want them to have the mindset to make the system better? Or is it the opposite? You want them to just follow the system? Because I see value in both. I see value in, hey, you've spent a lot of time creating the system. Follow the system because we know it's going to produce a repeatable, consistent output. And I also see value in like challenging team members to say, "Hey, I want you to leave this role better than when you found it."
Yeah, absolutely. So my goal is to have all of the team members collectively use all of our brains to help the system get better if we see something that will make it better. So yeah, I encourage my team members, because I'm tying them to the income, they want to do it. If I weren't tying them to the income, they'll just follow the system and whatever. But they are making suggestions all the time. "Oh, you know, we should do this instead of that." And I'm thinking like, "Oh yeah, that's a good idea." Or, "No, that's not a good idea at all." I serve as a filter always. But yeah, they're throwing ideas at me all the time because they want to see us hit those goals. Because those goals mean more money in their pocket. So everybody that comes into the company, actually, whether they stay for a year or 5 years, they're contributing to the future.
Yeah.
Whether they consciously realize it or not, because I'm extracting all of their tidbits and little tips and tricks from them just by way of us being together. I read somewhere in one of the books, like, every person that comes into a process shouldn't leave it better, and you should benefit from having them there. Like, the next person you hire should be like, because like, I have training system with people from recordings from old acquisition managers. They are actually training my new acquisition managers.
That's fantastic. And listening to those calls and kind of Monday morning quarterback them, like, hey, how would you have approached this particular seller's objection? Or what did they do right? Or what could they have done differently? Like, there's so much value in going back. And again, Monday morning quarterback in the situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Michelle, as we wrap up here, I'm going to flash this on the screen, but where can people connect with you? I think one of the cool things is to watch how you've evolved from a one-woman show to building this whole wholesaling business that we talked about and kind of being the JV queen here in South Florida to then building an actual, like, real business that you could take time away like you did earlier this month to do whatever it is you need to do or want to do. And now you've kind of transitioned, I see, into kind of like a content creator and a trainer and an educator. Talk to us a little bit about how people can follow you, connect with you, learn more about what you have going on.
Yeah. As a way of talking to people like you, and they're showing me, like, you're really good at this. Like, why aren't you talking about this? This is not really a normal thing that you're doing. I started to get into, like, the education space, more of talking about more of what I do. So on my Instagram, I'm talking about it at Michelle D. Murray. And then also I have a website, michelledmurray.com. I've left it open for people to book a call with me one-on-one so I can take a look at their businesses and give them insight on what they should do next. Because going from zero to JV queen to now having this business, it's a total of 13 years, to be exact, 13 years of going through like these different stages of wholesaling. So all of that back insight, all of that back experience, I'm able to help people like see like around the corner, like what they should do next. Because I know there's a lot of people trying to get into wholesaling, or they're in it already and they're stuck at a particular stage. Just having someone that's been through it is great. So yeah, on my website or follow me on Instagram.
Yeah, fantastic. So yeah, guys, check her out, MichelleDMurray.com. You can book a call or just follow her on Instagram. My friend, I'm grateful from episode 22, talking about co-wholesaling, to now episode 701, talking about processes and systems and structure and your huge team. And I'm rooting for you. I appreciate you. Great to have
you. Keep up the good work. Keep up the good work, Alex. You're doing amazing.
Thank you so much, my friend. Guys, our only ask for you, two small asks. One is to implement something you learned, right? Speed of implementation, I think, is one of the key ingredients that separates people that succeed and grow and thrive from those that don't, quite honestly. And the second is, it doesn't cost you anything to go and just make sure that you're following the podcast, subscribe, so that you get notified every Monday when we have incredible guests like Michelle, so that we can continue to deliver content and help you grow. So with that said, my friends, I will catch you on the next one. One last thing before you go. If you have been listening to the show for a while and or you have been getting value from the show, I would be 100% honored if you would share this show with a friend, or maybe share it with somebody that you think could benefit from this. It's my mission, it's my cause, it's my purpose through Flip Empire to impact and touch people's lives and in their businesses. So it would be an honor if you would be willing to share this episode. And one last thing, make sure that you're subscribed so that you get notified every Monday and Thursday when shows get released. I look forward to connecting with you on the next one. Until then, have a great day.